They just keep holding me, won't let go. Holding me, won't let go. I need armor to armor them down. I need a rama to ram them down. They just keep teasing me.
What's up, America? This is DJ Liberty here on radio.dominican.edu on a nice Wednesday morning. I am going to be talking on my show today about politics on Political Row. We will be discussing some national news. I have a lot of national news here, and I have a lot of state news. Now, I am very excited for this show. We'll jump right into it. So, Arizona's shameful right to discriminate bill. Matthew Whitaker from Arizona's legislature approved a bill that would allow discrimination. He says this bill shields those who show religion prompts and their discrimination. Now, this bill is really controversial around the nation right now, because obviously our goal has been to be equal rights, no discrimination. He says this bill will be aimed at LGBT community, but could affect many groups. He says Arizona is very complicated and not as biased as often depicted. This bill protects all individuals, businesses, and religious institutions from discrimination lawsuits if they can show that their discriminatory actions were motivated by religious convictions. Arizona's race relations and cultural politics are often misunderstood by the rest of the country. Racial diversity and progressivism exist within the predominantly white and conservative power structure of the Grand Canyon State. This has created an interesting dynamic. Arizona has sometimes made racial and cultural inroads ahead of the national curve, while fear of major demographic shifts, including a low LGBTQ community and the erosion of white privilege, have unearthed racial stereotyping, homophobia, and other policies. Many outside the state misunderstood this dynamic, assuming we are a wholly backward place without understanding that is much complicated than that. There is a saying, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. The rhythm of this saying is totally what Arizona endures. The state long resisted creating a holiday honoring Martin Luther King Jr., which it finally did in 1992. It is not too late to shift course, however. Governor Jan Brewer has the power to put Arizona back on the right side of history. The right to discriminate bill now sits on her desk. The bill passed last Thursday. She has 5 days to reject it or sign it into law. I have not seen whether it has passed or not. In other news, Obama and Boehner have been seen as been put in a midterm chess match. Obama and Boehner agree on one issue, even when you can tell the Speaker of the House and the President disagree on almost everything else. They agree on needing to keep the political base happy and these happy matters more than advancing once critical policy initiatives. For Boehner, his commitment to immigration reform was sacrificed. Obama, he dropped his ideas to tweak inflation adjustments for Social Security. Both of these moves show a shift to election year positioning. The midterm elections can prove to lead to a better cooperation between the House and the president, and especially in this case, the Speaker of the House, Boehner, and President Obama. For the GOP speaker, a personal commitment to big immigration changes, including a path to legal status for millions of undocumented workers, was sacrificed after it became clear there would be a conservative revolt. The argument from the right, turning out conservatives, is the key to 2014 midterm success, and big immigration changes would anger the base. And now the president's counter move, dropping from his new budget an idea he said was essential just a year ago, a more than modest calculation of inflation adjustments for the Social Security. Then it was a critical piece of entitlement reform and deficit reduction. Now, the calculation is simple. Liberals hate the idea, and pushing it in 2014 would anger a base the Democrats need in November. When Boehner retreated on immigration, it was the White House and its allies who said he was being short-sighted and putting politics ahead of the national interest. This poses an interesting way to look at the Speaker of the House and look at President Obama. It is good that they do agree on at least one thing and needing to keep their base happy for these midterm elections. However, this needs to keep rolling into the idea that we need to get cooperation in the House, get cooperation among the Senate, among the just the entire Congress, and cooperate with Mr. Obama and get some good legislation passed that will help this great nation move forward. We can't keep looking back. We can't keep looking into our history and saying our great history is behind us. We need to invest in what we're doing for the future. And now in some other funny news about Obama, he bet the Canadian president cases of beer on the U.S. versus Canada hockey games in the Olympics. It didn't take long for Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper to remind President Barack Obama that the U.S. president now owes Canada two cases of beer following the loss of the U.S. men's hockey team at the Sochi Winter Olympic Games. About 15 minutes after his country's team bested the U.S. on the ice, the Prime Minister claimed his prize on Twitter, saying, "Like I said, hashtag Team USA is good, but hashtag we are winter, at Barack Obama. I look forward to my two cases of beer, hashtag Canada vs. U.S., hashtag Sochi 2014. The heads of state had made the friendly wager Thursday morning, with each betting a case of beer on Friday's semifinal game, as well as the women's championship game on Thursday. The U.S. women's team lost in overtime 3-2. The White House tweeted, at PM Harper, "And I bet on the women's and men's U.S.-Canada hockey games. Winner gets a case of beer for each game. Hashtag go Team USA." From B.O. Barack Obama. Harper's immediate response was, "I'm betting at..." Or his tweet afterwards was, "I'm betting at Barack Obama one case of Canadian beer per hockey game this week. Hashtag Team USA is good, but hashtag we are winter. Go Canada go at White House." As for the men's team, Canada defeated its southern neighbors 1-0. It was the second Olympic Games in which Canada knocked the U.S. out of the gold medal contention. It's good to see that, you know, Obama's having a good time with our neighboring country and that we're out there having a good time with the Olympics, especially because his absence from Sochi was so... I don't know how to say this. Noticeable, and it was pretty hated. I want to say people did not agree with Obama not showing up. They felt it was a some kind of message to Vladimir Putin and how he is not in complete trust with Putin and his nation and Russia. In other news, a petition calls on Congress to give up their paychecks. This is really interesting. This is actually going to provide for a great topic that we have coming up later today in about an hour and a half. We will have two former congressmen here. Maybe we can touch on this. But As for right now, there was a petition announced by MoveOn.org that nearly 30,000 Americans have signed, and this progressive group calls on Congress to return their paychecks, in quotes, if they are not planning to do any more work this year. The petition states, if congressional Republicans don't plan on passing any more legislation until November, then they should give up their paychecks until then. The group says it launched the petition after some GOP leaders in Congress were quoted in media stories saying that they had no plans to vote for important legislation until after November's midterm election. Congress has a long to-do list. They should be considering legislation to raise the minimum wage, extend unemployment insurance, pass comprehensive immigration reform, and create more jobs, said Nick Berning, communications director of Move On Political Action. It is shameful that it is only February and congressional Republicans are already throwing in the towel for the year. The most recent approval ratings for Congress have been at about 12%. This 12% is very, very low approval rating of a group of people that pass our legislation for this great country. The petition to have congressmen return their paychecks is harsh, but it puts out a good message that things need to start getting things need to start moving along. They need to get legislation passed. They need to get things done. They need to make the nation more confident in what our leaders want to put forth for our nation and how they want to prepare the future for more legislation and just a better future all around. Now, this next topic is a very interesting plan proposed by the Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel. He plans to shrink the United States Army to its smallest force since before the World War II buildup and eliminate an entire class of Air Force attack jets and a new spending proposal that officials describe as the first Pentagon budget to aggressively push the military off the war footing adopted after the terror attacks of 2001. The proposal released on Monday takes into account the fiscal reality of government and the political reality of a president who pledged to end two costly and exhausting land wars. A result, the officials argue, will be a military capable of defeating any adversary, but too small for protracted foreign occupations. This is a big deal because our army, our military, is all over the world protecting, I wouldn't say protecting, but providing a service for so many nations around the world that I wouldn't say need us, but respect our help in keeping their nation in order or in some way just helping them. Now, officials who saw an earlier draft of the announcement acknowledge that budget cuts will impose greater risk on the armed forces if they are again ordered to carry out two large-scale military actions at the same time. Success would take longer, they say, and there would be a larger number of casualties. Officials also say that a smaller military could invite adventurism by adversaries. This brings up another good point. If we plan to shrink our army, what are any opponents, any terrorists going to view that as? If we are getting just countless threats from terrorists and other opponents, other adversaries, what are they going to respond with when we decide to shrink our military, shrink our army, and make it, I mean, it's not like we're trying to make our nation and our army more vulnerable, but this action kind of puts out that message. Now, a Pentagon official said that you have to always keep your institution prepared, but you can't carry a large land war defense department when there is no large land war. Outlines of some of the budget initiatives, which are subject to congressional approval, have surfaced, an indication that even in advance of its release, the budget is certain to come under political attack. Officials said that despite budget reductions, the military would have the money to remain the most capable in the world, and that Mr. Hagel's proposals have the endorsement of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Money saved by reducing the number of personnel, they said, would assure that those remaining in uniform would be well-trained and supplied with the best weaponry. The Guard and Reserves, which provided capable in their wartime deployments, although costly to train them to meet the standards of their full-time counterparts, would face smaller reductions, but the Guard would see its arsenal reshaped. This would be the smallest U.S. Army since 1940 if this plan to shrink the entire army would go through. For years, and especially during the Cold War, the Pentagon argued that it needed a military large enough to fight two wars simultaneously, say in Europe and Asia. In more recent budget and strategy documents, the military has been ordered to be prepared to decisively win one conflict while holding off an adversary's aspirations in a second until sufficient forces could be mobilized and redeployed to win there. This plan to shrink our army brings up a lot of questions, a lot of worries, a lot of doubts. I feel that, yes, we will still have the strongest army in the world, but it is a scary thought to think if we shrink our army, we'll be pulling soldiers out of places like South Korea. And then, you know, what happens from there? What happens to South Korea? If North Korea takes over South Korea, what do they plan to do? Do they gain more power? Do they gain more weaponry? Do they threaten us more and actually not just announce a threat and not do it, but do they actually go through with it? These kind of plans to shrink an army is I don't think is the right way to cut our budget. We need to find other ways to cut our budget and keep our army strong, keep our nation strong, and make sure that our army is the strongest in the world. Now, we're going to take a quick break here. This is DJ Liberty on radio.dominican.edu, and you're listening to my show, Political Row. We'll be back in a sec. Thank you.
You can't forget your with your head upon my shoulder, when you're in my arms, but you've gone somewhere deeper. Are you going to age with grace? Are you going to age?
Okay, hello everybody, this is DJ Liberty back here on radio.dominican.edu on my show, Political Row. Let's continue the talk of national politics here. We've got a couple more great stories. So, Obama is going to propose a shift in wildfire funding. President Obama's annual budget request to Congress will propose a significant change in how the government pays to fight wildfires. Administration officials said a move that they say reflects the ways in which climate change is increasing the risk for and cost of those fires. Wildfire funding shift is one in a series of recent White House actions related to climate change as Mr. Obama tries to highlight the issue and build political support for his administration's more muscular policies, like curbing carbon emissions from coal-fired power plants. On Monday, Mr. Obama plans to describe his proposal at a meeting in Washington with governors of western states that have been ravaged recently by severe drought and wildfires. The proposal will ask Congress to pay the costs of fighting extreme wildfires in the same way it finances the federal response to disasters like hurricanes and tornadoes, the official said. When unpredictable events like Hurricane Sandy are destructive enough to be declared disasters by the president, the Federal Emergency Management Agency is authorized to exceed its annual budget and draw on a special disaster account. The account is adjusted each year to reflect the 10-year average cost of responding to such events. Mr. Obama's budget proposal would create a similar exception for the Interior and Agriculture Departments, which have agencies that are responsible for wildfire response. In recent years, as wildfires have become more frequent and intense in the western United States, especially because of the drought, the cost of fighting the fires has soared. In a conference call with reporters last summer, the Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack said, "When you take resources to suppress fires, you sometimes have to take it from the very resources that you would use to restore property or to prevent fires to begin with. And that just basically shifts the risk to a much longer term and more serious risk." A series of scientific studies have warned that increasing carbon emissions from burning fossil fuels could cause the planet to warm by more than 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit by the end of the century, leading to rising sea levels, stronger storms, and even more extreme droughts. A study published last year by the Forest Service researchers concluded that wildfires were expected to increase 50% across the United States under a changing climate and over 100% in areas of the western United States by 2050. While there is intense resistance from Republicans and some Democrats in Congress to most of Obama's climate policies, the wildfire funding proposal has bipartisan support. His proposal is based on a Senate bill sponsored by Senators Ron Wyden, Democrat of Oregon, and Michael D. Crapo, Republican of Idaho. A similar bill in the House also has bipartisan support. A coalition of environmentalists, sportsmen, and timber producers has lobbied in favor of the bill. This bill would benefit our own state and in California a huge deal. Like it'd be a huge deal. We are experiencing a terrible drought. I mean, luckily here up at Dominican we're having a little bit of a rainstorm projected for actually 5 days straight, with maybe a little break I think in Friday. But this plan to fund wildfires more efficiently may be a big help to our state and states across the nation. In other news, a congressman was kind of put himself undercover, I guess you could say. Not undercover as in like hiding, but or being sneaky about it, but just undercover as a UPS driver to get more in touch with what his constituents do in his state. Representative Stephen Horsford, a Democrat from Nevada, has come up with one of the more creative ways to get to know his constituents by spending a day doing their jobs. Last Friday, while Congress was in recess for district work period, Horsford donned a UPS uniform and helped deliver packages, often flying under the radar of residents in his Las Vegas district who didn't notice him until he said his name while handing over his delivery. The job training also offered Horsford the opportunity to push for a top Democratic priority, an increase in the minimum wage to $10.10 per hour instead of the current federal minimum wage, which is $7.25 an hour. UPS currently pays their drivers an average of $32.50, and Representative Horsford applauded UPS for doing so. He was very excited of this higher pay for these UPS drivers. It's also stated that entry-level truckloaders earn between $11 to $12 an hour. This is a big deal for this Democratic representative from Nevada, because obviously with their push to raise the federal minimum wage, they, as in the Democratic Party, President Obama, in this past couple years, really shows that, you know, truckloaders earn between $11 to $12 an hour, and their raise only calls for $10.10 an hour, which is almost two full dollars lower than what truckloaders are earning. Well, average truckloaders. Horsford arrived for his day to work at 8 a.m. and met with company officials and stretched before heading out on his route with a 16-year veteran named Mark Sidman. While Sidman drove, Horsford worked the handheld device to track deliveries along the route. And funny enough, according to the Review Journal, Horsford was a fast learner, but when asked about his experience, he said that the congressman said that he made a grave mistake by not stretching enough before he went on this job, undercover job as a UPS driver. I think this is a really funny and creative and fun way to interact with your constituents and your district that you represent in Washington, D.C. It's a great way to show that even though a congressman, somebody famous, somebody in D.C. representing your district, he is willing to not necessarily give back. I mean, I'm sure he does, but in this case, reconnect with his district, show that he cares about his district by wanting to learn more about their jobs and what they do on a daily basis. Now we'll shift back to President Obama again and how more Americans are believing now that Obama is not respected by world leaders. At a time when he is navigating several delicate foreign negotiations and conflicts abroad, President Obama is taking a hit on an important metric: how Americans believe he is viewed by foreign leaders. For the first time in Mr. Obama's presidency, more believe he is not respected by world leaders. 53% say he's not respected, while just 41% of Americans who responded to a Gallup survey believe the president is respected abroad. When he took office in 2009, just 20% believed he wasn't respected on the world stage. As recently as last year, 43% thought he wasn't respected by world leaders. Although Mr. Obama's approval ratings have hovered in the 40s for most of his presidency, at times dipping into the high 30s, his perceived approval among world leaders has held steady at just above 50% since 2011 after coming down from the initial highs. His biggest hit has been among Democrats and independents. with the percent of each group believing he is respected abroad declining by 11% and 15% respectively from last year. Republicans who believe foreign leaders do not approve of the president have held roughly steady in the mid-70% range. That's a huge difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. Now, still, 51% of people believe the U.S. is viewed favorably abroad. It's not the highest number of Mr. Obama's presidency that was 55% in 2013, but it's still above a low mark of 43% when he took office. The percentage of people who believe he is viewed favorably is also higher than what former President George W. Bush received. He hit a low of 21% in 2007. Well, what changed for all these numbers for Mr. Obama? The changes seem to have to do more with Americans' perception of how world leaders view the U.S., not just other nations. Gallup suggests it could be related to a series of tense moments in the past year between Obama and prominent foreign leaders, which was largely the result of revelations that the National Security Agency was eavesdropping on other heads of state. This poses an interesting topic for midterm elections that are coming up. You can see that even the Democrats have shown a little bit of decline in their confidence that world leaders do not respect President Obama. It raises the question whether this I wouldn't say disrespect, but the absence of respect for President Obama is even healthy for our nation in the first place, with all of the, I mean, there's not, you know, a lot, but with other issues that are going on in our nation and around the world. Now, Obama has also now looked to governors for help with the economy. President Barack Obama, who has been kind of halted, put in a tough situation by a divided Congress, appealed for help Monday from the nation's governors. As he seeks to advance economic policies that stand little chance of winning passage on Capitol Hill, the president pressed in particular for states to act on their own to raise the minimum wage and expand access to early childhood education, two initiatives that have gained little traction in Congress since Obama first introduced them last year. While the governors assembled in the state dining room Monday politely applauded the president, it's unclear whether Republican governors are willing to collaborate with the Democratic president ahead of the November midterm elections. Republicans were planning to share their ideas for improving the nation's economy, including eliminating federal regulations and further delaying key provisions of Obama's health care overhaul. The White House has planned a series of events this week designed to highlight the president's desire for action. In a Sunday message entitled, "We're Not Sitting Still," Obama's senior advisor said the president this week would announce new action on manufacturing, infrastructure and transportation jobs, and a new initiative to ensure everyone who is willing to work hard has a shot at success. Not every governor met Monday with the president. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie left the NGA meeting early to attend his daughter's birthday and prepare for a budget address. Facing multiple investigations and a political retribution probe in New Jersey, the Republican leader will also skip a Monday news conference, or he did skip a Monday news conference, by the Republican Governors Association. Christie and several other governors are seen as potential presidential candidates in 2016. Obama made light of speculation about the race to replace him, saying he, in quotes, "enjoyed watching some of you with your eyes on higher office size up the drapes and each other." This call from Obama to other state governors to help him with his economic policy issues shows a little bit of distrust in our Congress. Granted, our Congress approval rating, as I said earlier, is at a mere 12%. And as I stated earlier, the divided Congress between the Democrats and Republicans have not gotten much done. And this completely shows how President Obama has not been able to get any legislation through and how he is desperate to get something going. I feel like this suggestion to state governors kind of shows desperation on Obama's part, but in a sense, it's almost what our nation needs at this point. We are getting desperate. We need things to start happening. And if it can happen on state level, Republicans should be happy with that. Though the federal government is asking, is upon the state governments to pass things that they want, Republicans should understand now that, you know, state governments have the opportunity here to take the lead and kind of push what they want in their own state. So we are here on radio.dominican.edu. I'm DJ Liberty. We are going to take a quick break from my show, Political Row. We will be back in just a few minutes. Thank you. Stay tuned.
Moving along at a pace unknown to man. Go, 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 go. Go, 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 go. And you thought the lions were bad. Well, they tried to kill my brothers. And for every king that died, oh, they would crown another. And it's harder than you think, telling dreams from one another. And you thought to kill my brothers, and felled in the night by the ones you think you love, they will come for you. And felled in the night by the ones you think you love, they will come for you.
What's up, America? This is DJ Liberty back here on my show, Political Row, on the one and only radio.dominican.edu. We are going to continue with a little bit of talk about some more national political news, and then we'll jump into some California political news. Just to finish off this segment, we have a senator who is pushing a bill to keep the U.S. Olympic winners from being taxed on prizes from, obviously, their medals or winnings in Sochi, Russia. American Olympians collectively won 28 medals for the United States of America, putting us in second behind host nation Russia in the number of most medals. South Dakota Republican Senator John Thune has proposed legislation that would let Olympians off the hook with the IRS. This bill, as anything does in Congress, has, or as, no, not a lot of things have in Congress, is bipartisan support. Supporters include Senators Marco Rubio, Republican from Florida, Chuck Schumer, a Democrat from New York, Mark Kirk, a Republican from Illinois, Kristen Gillibrand, a Democrat from New York, Tim Scott, a Republican from South Carolina, Roger Wicker, a Republican from Mississippi, John Hoeven, a Republican from North Dakota, and Johnny Isaacson, a Republican from Georgia. Thune's bill has received support from the White House, but so far, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid has not signaled a willingness to take up the measure. A Reid spokesman said that they were not familiar with the bill. This poses a question of, okay, then is this bill actually going to happen here now, or is it just talk? I agree with the bill, but Thune suggested he'd like President Obama to pressure Senate leaders to bring up the bill. I completely agree with this bill. I feel that what our Olympians do around the world for our country, representing our country in the Olympic Games, which are the Winter Olympic Games, I feel that they should not be taxed on their winnings. They put their heart and soul and their life into representing our nation in the Olympics. I feel that their winnings should not be taxed or taken away from them. Now, in other news, Democratic Representative Dingell, the longest-serving congressman, is going to retire. Michigan Democratic Representative John Dingell, the longest-serving member of Congress in U.S. history, will not seek re-election to another term. Dingell is 87 years old and has served in the White House, or in the House, since 1955, when he filled the seat vacated by his late father. Dingell played a role in many major pieces of legislation, including President Obama's health care overhaul. He became the longest-serving member of Congress in history on June 7, 2013, when he beat the record held by former Senator Robert Byrd of West Virginia. This shows, I mean, he's 87 years old, so obviously his time in Congress is coming to an end. The stresses and responsibilities of a congressman and at the age of 87 does pose, you know, an idea that he's getting too old. He probably just wants to finally pass on his ideas and his seat in Congress to somebody who is younger, get a chance to get a more of a young feel or a new feel in Congress. And everybody knows, if something can change in Congress to help, then so be it, we'll take it. And now for California state news. A California state senator by the name of Ron Calderon has been indicted on corruption charges. He has spent a dozen years at the state capitol, but he has built a reputation of someone who likes to live large, you know, enjoying the glitz and glamour, out-of-state political fundraisers, addressing conferences at high-end golf courses and beach resorts, and carrying bills to benefit specific industries. This specific industries is a big part of this. Federal prosecutors announced on Friday Calderon will be charged with 24 criminal charges that allege he took over $100,000 in bribes for his efforts to influence legislation, and this will cause him to lose all of that glitz and glamour and fashion that he has built up his reputation for. Now, the Senate is pondering Ron Calderon's fate. State Senator Ron Calderon pleaded not guilty to corruption charges in a Los Angeles courtroom Monday, and was freed after posting a $50,000 bond. Senate Leader Darrell Steinberg left a meeting with his colleagues and said they would give the Montebello Democrat a week to respond to their call for him to resign before taking any action on his future in the House. this accusation, this kind of fate of Calderon is extremely harmful to the California State just Senate in overall. I mean, having a senator being prosecuted for taking bribes to influence legislation looks so terrible on the state of California and on senators just around the nation. It makes you wonder, especially like after seeing movies, you know, like, I mean, it's, you know, it's not very relevant, but like if anybody saw American Hustle, how American leaders like that can take bribes so easily. It makes you think, okay, is Calderon the only one? Have they just caught one of so many? Are they trying to maybe make a statement out of prosecuting him and showing that this is no joke? If you're taking bribes, this needs to stop. It is extremely terrible for any senator, any congressman, any just political leader, anybody, period, to take bribes to influence something, especially a political leader who can influence legislation in D.C. That then poses a question, you know, what did he influence big time? Was he helping specific industries? What was he doing with this money? It just looks terrible on the part of Ron Calderon and even California, unfortunately. Now, in other news, another senator from California, Rod Wright, was found guilty of 8 felonies by a Los Angeles jury last month for lying about where he lives. Sentencing was delayed Friday for Democratic State Senator Rod Wright. Senate President Pro Tem Durell Steinberg said he will not ask for Wright's resignation yet, as he did for Calderon's. However, a spokeswoman for the Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office said, while the jury found Wright guilty, legally he is not considered convicted until he is sentenced by the judge. This delayed sentencing that Democratic State Senator Rod Wright got on Friday is a push to let him stay in the Senate as long as possible before, obviously, they've found him guilty until he's sentenced and convicted. And one more kind of, unfortunately, Senate news story we have here for you is a Senate leader calls for new tax on gas to fund transit. Californians gassing up their cars would have to pay a carbon tax. Now, this is not what anybody wants to see at all. Having to pay more tax, more money for putting gas in their cars, as if gas doesn't cost enough money already in the first place. It was proposed last Thursday by Senator Leader Durell Steinberg, the Democrat from Sacramento, and Steinberg said this plan would provide more stability in the state of California. That really, you know, poses a question, like, what is more stability? What are we trying to keep more stable? What is he trying to do? The proposal is to help fund transit in the state of California. Now, the motive here by the Senate leader is very questionable, to wanting to even tax more people in a way that is already a difficult kind of in a difficult situation here, because gas is already expensive. People do not want to pay any more money for gas, and now Senate Leader Durell Steinberg is calling for a carbon tax. That is not, you know, what any Californian wants to hear. So that concludes it for my news stories. However, in just about 20 to 30 minutes, we will have former U.S. congressman here on Penguin Radio. We will be interviewing former Congressman Frank Riggs and Brian Baird. This gives us a chance to interact with former congressmen, get insight to what their opinions are about Congress right now. And this is all made possible because of a program called Congress to Campus. Congress to Campus is a program that has been made in an effort to improve college students' understanding of Congress and American government and to encourage them to consider careers in public service. Now, beginning in 1996, the Stennis Center partnered with the association to assist in managing the program. Participating campuses also contribute to the program by arranging interactive sessions with students, paying a fee on a sliding scale, and absorbing all on-campus expenses related to the program. The program sends bipartisan pairs of former members of Congress, one Democrat and one Republican, Frank Riggs being the Republican, Brian Baird being the Democrat, to visit colleges, universities, community colleges, all of those campuses around the country. Over the course of 2 days, the former members conduct classes, they hold forums, they meet informally with students and faculty, and do interviews, talk show appearances like here on Penguin Radio, and with local press and media. Congress to Campus program provides a distinctive, powerful, and personal means to educate the next generation about American government, politics, and public affairs. The former members provide students with insights into the realities of American democracy through sharing their real-life experiences as candidates and office holders. The former members also deliver an important message about bipartisan cooperation, which is huge right now, being the state that our Congress is in right now, their approval rating, how they're viewed. I've gotten to sit down with these congressmen in my Intro to American Politics class yesterday, and hearing their stories of just the experience of running to be an elected official, flying back and forth between D.C. and home, managing their personal life, their family life, and being a representative for their district all the way in Washington, D.C. Their stories are incredible, and I really, really encourage all of you to stick around to listen to what they have to say. Now, these former members share their real-life experiences of both achievement and occasional frustration, bringing to life for their young audiences the theory and the practice of democracy, and explaining the often misunderstood ways of Congress and Washington. They present a living, bipartisan demonstration of what ought to typify our representative democracy. Decent people with different points of view who are able to discuss constructive ways to work through differences to solve public problems. Since 1996, the Stennis Center has helped plan more than 170 visits to campus throughout the United States. Now, we will have the former congressman here on Penguin Radio in about 20-25 minutes. We will unfortunately be cutting into Little Fish's show, Life's a Beach. However, we will, the congressman and I and a couple other DJs and students will be sitting in here in the radio station to talk with the congressman from 11:15 to about 11:45-ish, which will cut out a good chunk of Little Fish's show, but she will still have her show before and after the interaction here with the former congressman. Now, stay tuned for that. This is DJ Liberty. Thank you for tuning in to my show, Political Row, on Penguin Radio on the one and only radio.dominican.edu. Have a great day. Thank you.